Sometimes I feel like I don't have a partner. Sometimes I feel like I have a doppelganger. A doppelganger called General, who stars in this movie. He looks just like Flea. We all know he does. And I don't ever want to feel like I did that day. Drive out to the desert town. Is that Gary Busey? I don't ever want to feel like it smells in there. Think about all the smells in that biker town. Yeah, yeah. Oh, no. Oh, no.
That's right. Gotta change it. Gotta change it.
Music.
Oh, that was great. That was really good.
That guy looks exactly like Flea, though, right?
Oh, totally. Oh, 100%. 100%. Everybody, welcome to New World Pictures Podcast, where we're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
It's Long Mark.
I'm sorry, Long Mark. And Erica.
I go by glasses because I wear glasses.
How appropriate.
Right on, brother. You dig it?
We are in the midst of June Vroom, where we're talking about all the vroomiest movies released by New World Pictures. And this one is a movie that we actually talked about to start this podcast. Listeners may remember, some of you NWPP VIPs will recall, that we talked about a episode we recorded to try to learn what this podcast was going to be like, and we talked about all the Angel Biker movies. New World has put out a total of 6 Angel movies, 3 of which were biker movies. 3 of them were about a girl named Angel.
None of them are about actual angels.
None of them, no. Yes, Hell's Angels, I should say, is the early Corman Angel movies. And we decided we'll do an episode about all 3 of them. And it was a disaster. But we are finally, Mark's on the fence. He's not sure. He's got a lot of good qualities. Back.
I mean, if we're going to be honest with ourselves, have we really learned that much?
No, that we did not do. We just realized talking about 3 movies was too much. But
okay,
no,
that's
we,
fair.
Yeah, we probably were at our best back then.
But you'll never know.
You'll never know, because that is deep in the vault. So now we are getting back to it, and that is 1971's Angels, Hard as They Come.
I've seen it.
I'm quitting, man. I'm making it.
Angels, Hard as They Come. The new motion picture that explodes the screen with the most brutal chopper war ever to tear a town apart.
You plan to burn me! And you stuffed on my new mama!
Like a pack of mad wolves on a rampage, they live by one law. An eye for an eye, a piece for a piece.
Yeah, I dig your problem. But I just don't think your solution is right.
What works is what's right.
We didn't love the general, we wouldn't ride with him.
That's right, Brandon, you tell him! These guys love me!
Angels, Hard as They Come.
That's right. That 1971's Angels, Hard as They Come, brought to you by the Spanish Bit Cafe. Cold beer, home cooking. The Spanish Bit Cafe is where worlds collide. Like where hippies and bikers can meet in peace. But the best part about the Spanish Bit Cafe is that it is discreet. If you meet here, no one will know about it. No one. No one will ever see it. It will not be hardly talked about, but it is your meeting place. Come by the Spanish Bit Cafe. This movie was directed, and it was actually, this actually is the first movie directed by Joe Viola and then written and produced by Jonathan Demme. So this is their debut. We're starting, of course, as we usually do in NWPP fashion, with the last of the Corman Angels movies. There's already two others that had come out before this. Angels Die Hard was the first movie New World Pictures came out with, and Bury Me an Angel, and now Angels Hard as They Come. But this is the first movie for Joe Viola and Jonathan Demme. Jonathan Demme actually was a unit publicist and had met Corman on his second to last, penultimate, if you will, directorial effort, Von Richthofen and Brown, which he was shooting in Ireland. And I believe Viola and Demme were in England. And he got the job being the unit publicist, met Corman. Corman said, oh, you're a writer? Do you write scripts? And he said, why don't you write me a script? Because I'm starting this new company. Because at the time, he was putting out the first Angels movie and Student Teachers. And he had New World going, but he was had to finish up Van Richthofen and Brown for, I believe, United Artists. And so he writes up a script, which was a biker movie, because that's what Roger asked. And he wrote up a biker movie that was like a Rashomon-style biker movie, which, of course, was pretty much rejected. because Roger wanted something a little bit different than that.
He's like, Roger, what? I don't know what you're talking about. That's what young Roger sounded like. This here's New World Pictures. Come on now.
So Roger says in his book, How I Made 100 Movies in Hollywood, Never Lost a Dime, he says that he met up in London at a bar at the Hilton International. And he says this, quote, they gave me the script and I turned to walk out. And I said, where are you going? I'll read it here. Just wait a minute and have a drink. I'll look at it quickly. Okay, I said, Joe, you've directed commercials. Jonathan, you've produced them, right? They nodded. They couldn't believe it. We were there less than an hour. I want you guys to come to LA in 2 months. I'll give you my script notes for the changes. Joe, you'll direct. Jonathan will produce. And that is how they started. They basically got this movie.
Boy, New World Pictures makes making a movie look so easy.
Yes. Apparently, according to Demme, it was only 80-page screenplay that he read. He says, and Chris Nashawaty's Crab Monsters, Teenage Cavemen, and Candy Stripe Nurses, his book about New World and Roger Corman, he says that Roger read the screenplay and said, this is pretty good. I think we can make it. Joe, you direct, it does the same thing. Why don't you come out to L.A.? It's the same story. They corroborate each other. That's it. He says, though, that so we went out to L.A. to attend what we call the Roger Corman School of Filmmaking. You're not the only one, Jonathan. The movie was called Angels Hard as They Come. And said that at the time that Roger was not married, he didn't have kids yet, and he was the hip, cool dude that they were all trying to impress. So that is how they made this movie. They would team up again, and they would make Hot Box for New World.
I've made that before. I've made one of those before. It's easy.
That's right. That's right.
It's easy to do.
It's only a half-page script. It's That's just right. half a page.
It's real That's easy. Right.
Woman goes under the covers.
Emerges a hero.
She turns her bed into a chrysalis of gas.
That's right. I think they make that in 1972, and then they would come up with a story together for 1973's White Mama, Black Mama, which actually is a nearly new world because Corman then handed that over to someone else to make. Viola would, he would go on to a career in directing television or in writing television, I should say. He worked on T.J. Hooker and much more prominently on Cagney and Lacey. He was an executive story editor for them. And Demme would stay with New World. He would direct his own movie, 1974's Caged Heat. That's his directorial debut. Then he would direct 1975's Crazy Mama, also for New World. And then 1976's Fighting Mad, which he made for Corman, another nearly New World, but it was released by 20th Century Fox. Mm. This stars Scott Glenn in his first lead role in a movie. Glenn would work again with Demme in Fighting Mad, of course, as we all know. And then he would drop out of society, never to be heard from again. It's weird.
Yeah, so strange. Yeah, so he showed a lot of promise. He really did.
Really looked like he was going to have a career. What is funny is that he did spend some time getting all these roles in some movies. And then by the mid to late 70s, he like takes his family and just like moves to Idaho. And he's just like, forget it. But then gets pulled back in. And he's in a bunch of other movies like Apocalypse Now, Backdraft, and Silence of the Lambs with all its inaccurate planes.
Horribly inaccurate.
Horribly inaccurate.
One of major flaws. One of many flaws in that movie.
Yes. And this is again from Crab Monsters, Teenage Caveman, and Candy Stripe Nurses. Scott Glenn talks about the audition process. He says, quote, Joe Viola and Jonathan Demme were casting the film out of a no-tell motel in Hollywood. You had to show up on a motorcycle because otherwise they figured that any actor would say, oh yeah, I ride a bike. And they didn't want them showing up and not knowing how. I had been on motorcycles my whole life. So anyway, I drove my Honda over to the audition. I got what you would call the lead in the movie, along with Gary Busey and a bunch of both Hell's Angels and Gypsy Jokers. That's his story from auditioning for the movie. Here's where you can watch Angels, Hard As They Come. It is on Plex, Shout TV. It is on Tubi.
Tubi.
And it is also on this Blu-ray from Shout Factory, which is how
you can Eric own and it. I watch it.
You can own it. You can make it part of your collection. Mark, well, how did you watch it?
I watched it on the Blu-ray because, I mean, listen, not only does it look great, but it is chock full of extras.
Not even a trailer.
Nope. You get nothing. Nothing. You get movie chapters. That's
because,
what you get.
Because our kids are still just young enough. Like our littlest has, like, when I put put a disc in, he's like, ooh, scenes. And I'm like, it's not what you think. It's just, he gets excited. I'm like, not exactly what you think it is. It's just the scenes of the movie.
But I like that you choose to not tell him what scenes means and just let this perpetuate as something that he never understands.
I want him to still be excited about this ancient form of these ancient things called physical media. But anyway, when we originally watched this movie and recorded this way back 5 years ago, there was a version on YouTube and it is still there and it is still so dark. You cannot see it. As a matter of fact, I have my notes from our original recording.
Of course,
I know,
you
Mark,
do.
You have it too.
Yes, I do.
I think the best thing that I wrote down of all my notes was, and I know it's because I watched that YouTube version, as I just said, good thing they shot this all at night.
Which they don't, actually.
No, but it's largely during the day, but you can't see anything, you know, unless they're out in broad, you know, daylight. You cannot see anything. If they go inside, even during the day, it's very hard to see anything.
Now, it might have been the YouTube copy that we watched way back in the day. Or something has happened to me in the last 5 years. But many of the movies that we watch, it'll be my second viewing. Maybe I viewed the movie 10, 20 years ago, and I remember bits and pieces. But it is, you know, I'm watching going, oh, I don't remember this part. I swear to you, I don't remember watching this movie ever. I know we talked about it. Notes of when I watched it. I didn't remember a single fucking scene of this entire movie.
You know what? I'm so glad to hear that because that's how I feel about all these movies. Welcome. I'm so glad you're here.
I thought, what happened to me that I don't remember this at all? Yeah. I remember the other two Angel Biker movies. I don't remember this one. I didn't remember this one at all.
It was, you know, to watch three of these, to watch all these Angels movies that New World put out in a row is not something I'd recommend because they do become become a blur.
I've read through my notes and I was thinking, is this a Mark from another space-time continuum that wrote notes to his future self?
And was like, That's right.
I'm here to help you from 5 years ago know how to do a podcast that you'll do in 2024.
Right.
Because I don't know I don't even remember writing these. What happened?
And the timeline where you don't come across a time machine. right. We record this episode and you're like, I didn't watch it. And you're trying to make it up and you didn't see the movie. So then you find the time machine and you go back in time and you type up some notes. It's like, I know Mark's not going to have time.
He's not going to have time. Prepared.
Future Mark is going to be so busy.
I looked at Future Mark's calendar and he is booked that day. He's so packed. I'm going to go ahead and write these notes.
I'm going to figure this out for him. All right. Well, let's talk about what this movie is about. Let's find out what Angels, Hard as They Come, is about. Mark, let's start with you.
Are you a drug dealer? Better stay away from Ghost Town. Are you a member of a marauding gang packing cases of Rocky Mountain Kool-Aid? You better steer clear of Ghost Town. Are you a freewheeling pacifist with a penchant for graffiti? Keep your paint cans away from Ghost Town, because Ghost Town puts the hung in hung jury. And if you go there, you'll find yourself as hard as you come.
Oh, wow.
I think that kind of summarizes
that's,
it.
That's
it in a nutshell.
That's the summary. That is Erica, it. What is Angels Hard as They Come about?
This movie's just a day in the life of an old biker, you know, just riding around the desert, staying open to possibilities, looking out for hot hippies. It's just crazy. It was a little biker riding around looking for trouble.
Well, for me, I need to quote Dr. Theodore Geisel, who once said, if you obsess over a sluice, you're going to pay the price when that sluice gets loose.
Sluice! Oh, man. We don't talk about the sluice enough.
We don't. We will be talking about it in this episode, that's for sure. Let's switch to the Letterboxd synopsis. We are on Letterboxd.
Give us a
follow there. It's not long, so I feel like it might be on the nose, but let's find out. A group of crazy bikers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, which one are you talking about? But let's find out. We'll move on. A group of crazy bikers meet up with a group of drug addicted hippies. Well, okay.
I'm not sure about drug taking
hippies. We don't get to know them enough to understand their addiction, their potential addiction issues.
True.
They could be. I don't know. We don't know them well enough.
They're certainly functioning.
They're high functioning drug addicts.
Yeah.
And I would also take umbrage with small town. They say a group of drug addicted hippies in a small town. It's a ghost town. Not a small town. That makes it sound like they're just like in a small town out with a bunch of the locals, but they're not. They have the run of the place because it's a little ghost town. But the two roving factions are soon at odds with one another, and chaos ensues. Okay, so we're leaving out the angels, which is a part of the title, and
we have
left them out of the synopsis.
Right.
This seems to be just the bikers and the hippies. And yes, that's true. There's hippies and there's bikers, but there's like two groups of bikers, the dragons and also the angels. Three angels who, as Mark was mentioning, have a drug deal, which they have to put on hiatus because of some undercover police.
I mean, we assume so. Yeah. Undercover police following them.
We have to think. Because they have one guy with an early nose ring. I feel like that was not a thing at the time.
Maybe a nose ring, like the septum ring, like the one at the base of your nose. Yeah, exactly.
I could never pull that off. The septum ring. I don't think I could pull it off.
I think you could. I think you should give it a shot. I know what you're doing this weekend.
Go get a septum piercing.
In any case, he's the one who finds the cops, and they have a chase, which does not go well for the cops. And so they decide that they will commence this drug deal in 8 days. And in the meantime, they find some fun stuff to do, which is to hang out with the dragons and this hippie commune who have decided to just hang out in this ghost town.
Yep. How these two factions have come together is a mystery.
They come together at a gas station. That's where the two biker groups.
The hippies and the marauders.
Because very discreet Spanish Bit Cafe, which is highly discreet. You know, what goes down there, we don't talk about.
It's like couples counseling, but for totally different political spectrum groups. They come there, they teach them how to get along, and then they send them on their merry way.
And they send them, hey, there's a ghost town nearby if you want to hang out and see if this will work.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that's really kind of tough about this movie, it, at least for a brief period, is that the angels, now we only have three angels, but at the same time, to start this movie, I couldn't tell the dragons or the angels apart for a long time. And to what Mark had brought up, I had seen this before, but I still was like, who's who? Who's not a dragon?
Well, you
I
mean, can I knew kind of Scott tell Glenn, because but... the angels have jackets that say angels on them and the dragons have jackets that say dragons on them. So that's one way you can tell.
But unless you see the back of that jacket up close, because they're all denim jackets. So you still have to be able to read the jacket.
Yeah, but so it took me a little time.
Okay, you had no problem. Well, that's good.
I like to check the fine back, so I'm always peeping those backs.
That's some detailed recall from somebody who doesn't remember watching this movie before. Okay, whatever you say, Longbark.
Well,
I can dig it.
When you watch a movie you can't remember, you're just like, just turn around, and I'll remember all of it.
Well, to be fair, I do remember from when I watched it 2 days ago. I just don't remember when I watched it 5 years ago. So I'm excited to watch this in 5 more years and have a totally new experience with it.
Mark's Letterboxd review of this is not very memorable backs.
Or
fronts.
Yeah, it's not the best backs I've ever seen, but, you know, some of them were decent.
And I'm not talking. Only a couple hot boxes too. So, and that's not even the point of this movie. That's their next movie. Eventually, though, you do get to know the angels, and you get to know them pretty well. The Juicer, we have Monk, we have Long John.
He introduces himself to the hippie girl, and he says that his name is Long John. And it might be my favorite scene only because she doesn't burst out laughing. Like, how can you sell that name and not have people be like, you mean like Silvers?
But was that even going at the time, though? Was Long John Silvers a thing in the early 70s?
Mark? Yes, for sure. For sure.
He is so confident. Well, let's get to it. In the meantime, I will say.
Doesn't remember 5 years ago, but distinctly remembers the 70s. Right. So
this movie, not a part of his core memories. His core memories are Long John Silver's. I didn't realize this about my own brother. This is news to me.
When it comes to poorly cooked corner fish.
Fish.
Yeah. I mean, when it's virtually gas station fish, I know where to get my
grub
on.
When was the last time you bought some fish from a gas station? Why would you ever?
You can't remember anything? You're eating gas station fish on the regular?
I did eat sushi at a place that was attached. Literally, the building was attached to an oil change place. So that I think that qualifies. But Long John Silver's was founded August 18th. 1969.
Okay. So brand new. Hadn't permeated the culture yet, Long John. I think he was probably based. I thought he based the name more on pants, but then the chain of fish restaurants. But I don't know. Who knows? It's up to you. In the meantime, we do get to know Juicer and Monk. Monk is played by James Iglehart, who would go on to star in New World's 1973 film, Savage. Sorry, it has an exclamation point. Savage!
Yes.
Oh!
Say it right. I was like, what are you talking about? Okay, got it.
The other person that stands out is the general, which Erica mentioned. Definitely it was played by Flea. Because he looks just like Flea. So
I mean, I give Flea a lot of credit. He's ageless. He has kind of always looked in his mid-50s, and that's incredible.
This is also like the early 70s, so for him to take time off from watching the Lakers of that period is really well done, Flea. To be honest, he's actually played by Charles Dierkop, who worked with Corman already in the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. and ends up in loads of New World movies, including one we've already seen, Night of the Cobra Woman, which we've already talked about.
He played the Cobra?
Right, exactly. He actually played the Knight.
I don't remember who he was in Night of the Cobra Woman.
I tried to find, I don't remember either, and I tried to like look up and see if I could find a picture of him from it, but I there wasn't anything online. I don't remember. I'd have to rewatch the whole movie, and I was like, you know what? Sorry. Can't do that.
Yeah, no.
I got this movie to worry about. I can't watch this one I've watched already many times again just to find his one small role.
I'm
anyway,
about 3 years away from totally forgetting that movie.
That is just going to be gone. We're going to start having some repeat episodes we don't realize we've already done.
It's going to be play a joke on Mark. We do the same episode again and
somebody
I'm like,
slipped that
I
in.
Don't know. I'm like, love
okay,
it.
Sounds good. Oh, 18 again. Oh, I didn't realize. Oh, okay, cool. Why didn't we know? Why haven't we talked about this one before? He also was played he was also in The Hot Box and Student Teachers. And he was the killer Santa in the original Silent Night, Deadly Night, which is a series not released by New World, but nonetheless, we ranked that series years ago. So go ahead and check that out if you haven't already.
Or skip to the second one, because you're going to see all the first one in the second one, plus a
lot
more.
If you're talking about the movie themselves, I meant our ranking episode, but sure.
Oh.
I mean, yes, yes. In terms of telling them about the movies, for sure. You could skip. You could probably see he's probably in part two as well, as they do a half an hour of wrap up from the first movie. So yes,
right.
It's a real. I mean, it was not released by New World, but the Silent Night, Deadly Night, at least the first two, the second one, very much a Corman movie. We got half an hour of one movie. We just need to shoot 50 minutes of new stuff. We got a whole film. That's very much a Corman thing. What does happen in this movie is an unfortunate murder of one of the hippie girls. Astrid, who is played by Gilda Textor, who appeared in only a couple movies in the 70s, and then she went on to become a costume designer in movies instead, and she gave up her acting career. But in this, she has a scene with Scott Glenn, and then she is unfortunately murdered. We don't really see it.
Yeah, it may be the most convoluted murder scene I've seen in a long time, because she gets stabbed somehow. Like, someone has
somehow
a knife, but
how? Yeah,
the way it's choreographed, you can't really. It no one's actually in the act of stabbing, and suddenly she's dead. And it's a really confusing scene.
It's a bit confusing, and I think that's to give some sort of mystery to it. But in any case, once she's murdered, our angels, hard as they come, are blamed for this particular crime. So they have a trial. Of course, they have a trial. They have a biker trial, which is interesting because I imagine it's a criminal trial, and yet it's a judge-appointed trial, which in criminal law, you don't have. Civil law, you do, but you don't in criminal. But I don't know. Maybe the defense didn't check the box that says we would like a jury, but they didn't do it. Anyway, it's not there. The defense enters a plea of guiltier than hell with their response. And, I feel like that was, didn't feel like they got some unbiased, representation, because they clearly had to rely on the state, the biker state, in order to have a lawyer, but so be it. The prosecution goes first with their opening statement.
The Dragon's case is a simple one. We all know the facts. This Long John here had horns with a dead hippie chick. While we were turning her out last night, he freaked. With the help of Angel's monk and juicer, he tried to assassinate the general. But they blew it. They killed the chick instead. They arrest the Dragon's case. Straight up and straight down.
Well, that if there is a jury, they seem to be definitely on one particular side. it's no hung jury here, because they are already in the bag for one particular side. But I appreciate the fact that this biker trial really tries to go by the rules At one point, the presiding judge of the general just asked, what's next? And that's when we got our plea and stuff. And so it was like, oh, they're going by the actual trial procedure. So good job them. Making sure they do. They may not respect the law, but they do respect the common law, which makes up our judicial system here in the United States. Common law being the original British law that we inherited. But in any case, moving forward, there was not much from the defense. Which I guess the defense was just saying they were taking that burden of proof thing pretty seriously. Like, hey, we have no defense. It's all on you as the prosecution to have to really sell it on these guys.
I'm too busy coming up with my attorney's good. I mean, sometimes
very true. Some of them are more they are more concerned with their magic career.
Right. Yeah. I mean, look, he might have been busy that day too. And, you know, 5 years ago, that version of himself should have written him some notes for the defense.
We only saw one. Right, exactly. He didn't have somebody who found a time machine was able to give him some notes on what to do. Plan out his whole court strategy. But in any case, also, we didn't see it, but there may have been some other court cases that the biker trial court had to get to. So this might have been just the early morning of the docket. And there might have been other cases. Right. And so we don't know that. We only got to see this one. In any case, there is someone who speaks up for the defendants, and that's clip two. So they do get some, there is some justice here.
General, I got something to say. I know I ain't part of this deal, but this is ridiculous, man. Someone's already been hurt.
Shut up, you!
Well, that did not go well. Essentially the defense case. But by the way, that voice is Gary Busey in one of his earliest roles. Sadly, this is where Busey and New World depart. Not that Busey did not get close. He appears in 1976 as the Gumball Rally, not Cannonball. So they have the same plot. But he does work with New World regular David Carradine, but not in Death's Port or Death Race 2000, but the 1974 Carradine directed You and Me. And Busey will team up again with Scott Glenn in the 1973 horror western called Hex. But unfortunately, never again. But he will always be Mr. Joshua from Lethal Weapon in my book.
Always.
Always. And the friendly uncle in Silver Bullet. But basically, those are the two roles I probably saw him. But Mr. Joshua, probably more than anything.
Guaranteed.
Yeah. Mark and I watched that movie probably no less than 300 times. So
I don't remember it. That's funny.
I was about to say. Have you? You haven't seen it in 5 years then. So. You need to see everything again within 5 years or you completely forget. Speaking of Glenn, though, the Angels do get to at least represent themselves in clip three.
General, I can't figure out what trip you guys are on. I mean, you say we tried to snuff you and got the chick instead, man. That don't make any fucking sense. All I did was bust your train from where I was. It was my piece of ash it was pulling. That blade could have been for me or Monk or Juice. Point is, you didn't know who killed the chick. I didn't know who killed her, so what's this whole fucking number about, man? We got enough hassles from the Heat and the other citizens. Why bum trip each other? Look, all we want to do is just get on our hogs and meet our club and just drop all this shit.
I mean, how he didn't end up in more movies, I don't know. It's really a shame.
He really seems like he should have had a career.
Also, hell of a defense. How can you not say... Yeah, you know what? You're right. You're free to go.
It's true. However, it does not work. It does not work. And the general even says, like, ooh, he's so slick. But they are sentenced to biker games, as is the will of the biker court. First up, they are given a tour of the town as they are dragged behind bikes while they are tied to ropes. And again, this is Scott Glenn and Crab Monsters, Teenage Cavemen, and Candy Stripe Nurses. He said, when actors say they do their own stunts, it's almost always a lie. They mean they hung off a building or something, but what they don't mention is that they're wearing a harness that was attached to a wire that can hold a pack of elephants for 1,000 years. But real stunts are like...
1,000 years? Really?
This is not hyperbolic. He is just speaking the truth here.
He ran the numbers on those wires and was like, yeah, I've seen this lasting That's about right. 1,000 years.
That's okay. Right. The science doesn't lie. They did a test.
That poor elephant.
Right. I mean, after a good 80, 90 years, there was not much left of that elephant, but still, right. Like, it held it.
All the years of being like, you got to go up there and feed the elephant again. Damn it.
They're dead. We don't need to feed them anything. All right. But real stunts are like sliding a motorcycle under a fire engine. I remember they literally dragged me behind a Harley Davidson. My chest was raw and bleeding, and I got a face full of pebbles and all kinds of crap. But back then, I didn't even think about that because I was finally in the movies. Roger was saying, hey, I'll rob you blind, but you'll actually get to do it. That was priceless. The other game that they have to play is chopper polo, which does seem like it's doomed to fail from the beginning.
Yeah, that's the dumbest idea ever.
Yeah.
That is ridiculous.
It gives the angels some room to fight back, which of course they do. And then Monk escapes and eventually he's going to bring back Cloud and the other angels. And I mean, it just was a very bad idea because the bikes they have are not exactly, they can't really move around as well as they would like. They need to kind of make wider turns. They're longer bikes. They're not dirt bikes. Yeah.
And they're on sand. So they're playing chopper polo with these guys that, yeah, their hands are tied together, but they very quickly cut the ties off. But it seems to me it'd be pretty easy to keep dodging the bikes. All you have to do is jump to the side. They can't turn very quickly.
Nope.
Yes, they have a chain in their hand, but if you jump, say, 2 feet away from the bike, they have to then maneuver to turn it around and get speed and catch back up to you. Seems like a pretty poorly planned game.
Yeah, and it really becomes, not only is it the second and final game that they have of the biker games, it was definitely not a good idea. While they have
because Monk one of them escapes
because they escape and they take off and steal one of their bikes and beat up some of their dudes. While a monk is on his trek, he takes this whole trek to go through the desert, which they have worked out. This is the direction you go. Keep the sun over your shoulder and you'll make it to Cloud's house, which we've heard a little bit about Cloud, and we see Cloud on occasion outside of his house very, very briefly.
Also, they never explain why one of the guys, and I think it's the one with the septum ring, why does he have a very obvious limp? You would think that if you're going to introduce someone with such an obvious and very strong limp, you would have create some kind of backstory around that.
You mean Limpy? You mean the biker Limpy?
Yeah, biker Limpy. I mean, they even named him Limpy.
Yeah.
Why?
I mean,
why?
Funny story. That's his real name.
I thought they called him Skip.
Just out of spite.
That was his nickname.
Skippy. Right.
But yeah, Limpy Johnson.
Just a
mess. Why would they not do something with that and give it some kind of backstory?
Mm-hmm.
All right, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I literally don't know. I have no idea.
I'm glad I brought that up.
Yeah.
I don't know, and I don't want to talk about it.
What happens after this is that Monk does bring back the angels, because in the meantime, the hippies have drugged the dragons. They throw a wild party, and
Which gives them just smell in that ghost town. Oh my god, so bad, awful.
And this party only gives them time to release the angels, set them free, so that they can have a final showdown. As you know, a biker movie. I don't know if you've seen many biker movies, audience, but there's not much to them. This actually has more to it than most biker movies. That's one thing I'll say about it. And but they do have a final showdown, and then we end with this song. So this music was written by Richard Hieronymus, who did the music for all the Angels movies that Corman released. The music is played by a band called Carp, which is the band started by Gary Busey back in Oklahoma, and he moved out to LA to do, and that is him singing and playing drums.
No kidding.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
It's a cool song, and it's he's doing a great job at singing. Carp is a terrible name for a band, though.
Yep. They released one record in 1970. They started in the spring of 1966 at Oklahoma State University with Gary Busey and other students, Ron Getman on guitar, Ron Crowder on bass, and Glenn Mitchell on piano. They relocated to Los Angeles. They signed to Epic for one album, the self-titled, 1969 album, rooted equally in rock, blues, and country. Two singles, Save the Delta Queen and Page 258. I don't think that those songs, I sort of briefly scanned through the record. They don't show up in the movie because I think Richard Hieronymus writes the music, but they end up playing it. Getman, Crowder, and Mitchell, obviously Busey decides to go on and become an actor. His bandmates, they continue collaborating as session musicians behind Janis Ian, Loudon Wainwright III. Busey does play drums under the alias Teddy Jack Eddy, backing artists, including Kris Kristofferson and Leon Russell. And of course, he contributed an original song, Since You've Gone Away, to Robert Altman's film masterpiece, Nashville. And really? It was his music background that is what got him to play Buddy Holly in 1978's The Buddy Holly Story, for which he was nominated for an Oscar. So,
Wow. Well, good for him. I mean, Mr. Joshua got nominated for an Oscar? I would not have seen that coming.
Yeah. Playing Mr. Joshua right before he had that motorcycle accident.
Yep.
And then he had permanent brain damage, but that's when he still seems okay in Point Break and some other films. And then, I don't know, things take a turn. I don't know what happens exactly, but maybe drugs get involved. I'm not sure. But it's time to talk about
things we love and things we hated.
Let's talk about it. What'd you just say at the end there?
You dig it.
Okay. Let's talk about the things we love and the things we hated about Angels, Hard as They Come. Mark, what's something you loved?
I loved that at one point in the movie, these bikers are living in a ghost town. We don't really ever see them eat. We just see them drink beer or drink some kind of alcohol for the entire morning, noon, and night. They are drinking. Mm-hmm. And at one point, inexplicably, one of them finds an apple and they look at it and say, well, what the shit are we going to do with this? Let's make an apple bong.
Not eat it.
Because God forbid you eat an apple and maybe get some fiber and some vitamins in your body. No. The only good
Boo,
use for an
you
apple
square.
Is,
Boo,
is
you big
to
square.
Smoke weed. And I just love that, like.
Who invited the narc?
Long Mark, more like Long Narc. you dig it
It's just hilarious that they go out of their way to damage their bodies as much as possible. I also loved that this movie has a shocking amount
really spoken write-offs. As a person beyond that age, right? They're just destroying their bodies out there. Couldn't you just eat an apple? Couldn't you just
one.
Once?
You found one apple. Go ahead and eat it. I mean, it's not going to do you a ton of good. But
we don't know how. There could be a whole apple tree in that town. We have no idea. We don't get the full view of that. They have a robust judicial system. They could have a whole apple orchard. We're not sure.
Right. And, you know, obviously they might have been very strict on a very strict paleo diet. We're like, that much sugar? Oh, no. I can't put that in my body.
That is bong only.
I've been in ketosis for a month. I'm not about to fuck that up now.
I got to keep this ketosis going, man. I've been too solid on it. You got some salami and some cheese around here?
Oh, I'm sure they had all the salami and cheese they could get their hands on. Nothing but protein shakes. I mean, that was mostly
we got
what
some
they were
Wonder
drinking.
Bread. Get that out of my face! Get that away from me! I don't even want to touch it. I'll get out of ketosis. Erica, what is something you loved?
I knew this was coming. This is always a part of the episode.
Yeah,
I
it
thought
is.
Thought about it.
We have not talked about the tally. I don't know if you need some inspiration, I'll just bring that up.
Yeah, there's a titty tally, but you don't come by it honestly. You know, it's titties by force, which is not as enjoyable as when it's, you know, voluntary.
Well, I do think that the time that one of the hippie girls takes her shirt off is because she has already put the, like, I would have to imagine it's acids soaked into the sugar cubes and then put that in their like tea or whatever that she serves them. And I think she's trying to like party with them and make them feel like they're having a good time so they don't think about the fact that they're sort of drugged, and it gives cover for, again, right, a scene we don't see, but I guess one of the hippies running and letting the prisoners free. But so so that is...
I also think girl on the doom buggy was desperate to pop those bad boys out. I mean, she was like, she was waiting for the moment. She needed a very small excuse to
threw her top off for the very first person they saw in the middle of the desert. Right. It was the very first person. She was like, okay, take my shirt off.
You think that was something they discussed when they were trailering the dune buggy out to the dunes? She's like, seriously, if we run into someone, I am popping my top off.
He's like, taking my nobody shirt off. In I'll this do desert. It.
He's like, yeah,
I'll do
no,
it.
Trust me, babe. There's nobody out in this desert. I've been out here 100 times and never seen a single person. Well, trust me. If I see someone, you know what I'm going to do.
Yeah, and you know what I'm going to do. I'm going to get my gun out. So you got your thing, I got my thing. I'm going to be racist as hell, and I'm going to get my gun out. So,
and you think for a minute that if he spotted the guy out in the desert before she did he have the impulse to turn the doom buggy around quickly to just prove his point that we never find nobody out there in the desert?
Like, dang it. Well, I'm going to get my gun out first. He got his gun out first. He's like, I got it. That's true. I got it out first.
That's true. That was a flex.
So, Erica, though, go back to you here. What do you think? Something you loved?
Man, I knew you were probably going to come back to me. You usually do. Even when I thought maybe we had gone on another tangent. Oh, things I love. Love is such a strong word. You dig?
It is your segment. This is actually your segment.
I mean, I guess I enjoyed the very 70s slang.
Okay. All right.
You know? Between, you know, the bikers kind of slang and then the hippies.
Sure. Sure.
If pressed, I feel like I'm being pressed. So okay. There you go. So I did it. I did it. All right. Move on. Things you love, Ryan. God.
Before we do that, I just have to say this has been really interesting to be on the other side, to be in the audience versus being on the stage. J. Mark's Joyous June, I've been able to see Erica wrestle with the same things that I wrestle with in Mark's Miserable Marvelous May. And I truly feel for the situation that you're in, Erica, and I sympathize with how hard this has been for you. And
thank you.
I just want you to know that I'm here for you, and I'm also excited to do this next year.
Thank you, Long J. Mark. Thank you.
Something I loved. This movie is kind of if it reminds me of anything else other than a biker movie, it's kind of like a spaghetti western. It feels more like that even than a biker film. And that can mean a big over the top villain, which this movie has.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you guys were invited here by us, dragons. Was our guest. You drank our wine, you smoked our weed. We treated you like brother outlaws should. So what happens? You hassled us. You messed us up. You busted up our party. You spoiled our train. You tried to burn me! And you snuffed out my new mama! That's bullshit!
Every time they let the general just go bananas, I was like, we need tons more of this. Like, they needed that. And that line about the mama is a very crucial line, I think, for their ad campaign, because ad campaigns, like they got his mama or something. And it's basically as if they're getting revenge because they took out his mama, which is mm-hmm. not exactly how that line, it does not work for the ad campaign, right. but that's right. the ad campaign that they rolled with at the time. But the general basically was probably, if I switched over to things I hated, I think we needed more of him freaking out.
Yes, but for sure.
Every time he did freak out, I was like, okay, I'm in on this. Like, let's have some real freak out vibes. Because Scott Glenn is, and even the rest of his, you know, the other two guys and the other two angels, they're very even keeled. Scott Glenn,
yeah, cool as a cucumber.
He never goes much beyond that exact tone. He is super chill, super not rattled by almost anything. The general goes a little bananas, but he builds up to it, which I like, but we needed more of him freaking out.
Plus, the only spaghetti they're having in this Western are zucchini spirals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's correct. I'm in some strict ketosis. What is in this pasta sauce? Is there sugar in this? Because I will not have it. Let me read the back.
There better be meat in this. There better be meat.
There's got to be some meat, and we just need to puree some straight tomatoes, okay? And
listen, hippies, none of that soy shit. I can't have any of that.
Can't have it. I need the meat. There's too many carbs in that soy meat. Too much to try to bind it. Are you kidding?
Yeah. Plus, do you think I need estrogen in my body? Look at me. Look at me.
Oh, my God, dude. I can't
risk that.
Come on. I have a biker court to run.
I've got to be up early. Yeah. I've got first court. My first hearing is at 6 a.m.
Five cases tomorrow. And yeah, I'm going to have a conversation about the scheduling. Yes, I am. Yes. But in the meantime, I have five cases.
do you know how hard it was to pass that handlebar exam? Come on, give me a break.
I studied for that thing for a year and a half. It's a 3-day test.
It covers all the laws plus small engine repair.
And at the end, just to celebrate after I took the test, I tied my buddy to my bike and I dragged him around in the dirt.
As you do.
Just for fun. Just have a good time. All right. As I sort of switched into some things I hated, or at least one other thing I hated, which is I wanted more of the general. But let's talk about things we hated. Mark, what did you hate?
I hated how dirty everyone is.
Ugh,
yeah. It's just, how do you honestly expect to hook up with anyone when you're that filthy?
Would you just eat an apple and take a shower? That's Mark's.
It's just, look. Not only are they filthy, they sleep outside. So not only are you like gross and sweaty in the desert during the day, but you prefer a hot, sweaty sleep? Oh, I mean,
Mark,
disgusting.
Mark revealing he's a serious camper.
I
hardcore survivalist, Mark here.
Listeners should know by now, I don't camp. I am not a camper. I don't like to camp.
We didn't camp as kids. I mean, everyone can find out. Mm-mm. We camped one time and we rented an RV to do it.
Yes.
That is to say our parents did it. We did not do any of the renting. And I came down with a fever during that trip.
Some of you on this podcast haven't woken up in a flooded tent and it shows.
Yes.
That's only you.
And mm-hmm. Ryan's fever is otherwise known to the rest of us as chicken pox. Yeah, it was chicken pox.
Chicken pox, yes. Like I came down with chicken pox during the trip.
Mm-hmm.
So it essentially convincing our parents, Mark, that no camping. We're not camping.
Nope.
Bad things happen. Let's not do
it. But that is, an RV is not camping. A camping is a tent on the ground.
It's as close as we got, at least for our childhood, for sure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's not for me.
Because you smell. Erica, what is something you hated?
This movie isn't as fun as I thought it would be. It feels like a trick because you see the poster for it and you're like, okay, a tattooed babe on a bike. And then you see the main menu as you're waiting for it to play. And you're like, okay, some like interesting drums. And again, tattooed babe on a bike. Like, ooh, what's that? Gary Busey? Well, okay. All right, let's see what this is all about. Okay, here we go. Yeah, it just isn't fun. It isn't fun.
I mean, and again, the poster, no surprise, does not, as I've been showing the Blu-ray, which has the poster, they ripped off his mama, so he tore Chopper City apart. An eye for an eye, a piece for a piece. It's got nothing to do with this movie.
No, not at all.
Not
at all. I was waiting for the mom to show up through the movie, and she never showed up.
Someone went through my purse. Which one of you did it? Axe, was it you? Brain? Who went through my purse? That's the general's old lady, so...
Crab.
Cool. Crab. Did you go through my purse? Just go to the doctor, shave off your pubes, and figure it out. Come on, Crab.
You have court in 2 days.
Crab is the grossest biker, right? I know we're not at final questions yet. No, but Mark talked about how gross they all are, but he's the grossest one.
For sure.
Because they were all nicknamed after something that they have. General has the helmet, and he's essentially in charge. Axe has an axe. Brain has the brains. The magic guy, you know, has the rabbit and the hat. Long John has a big dick. Like, they're all named after what they have.
We're assuming. We don't really know, but we're assuming.
So, like, ew. Did he always have crabs?
He always wears some pants under his pants. Maybe that's why Long John's all Long John.
Oh, it's because, maybe.
Or no, it's because he's constantly screwing up his Levi sizes, and he keeps buying a 34 56. So he's like,
he's having his pants break out the scissors and cut down the bottom of his jeans. He's like, damn it.
Who are these made for?
I keep thinking I'm a 38L. Why do I keep doing that?
L for Long John. But did he join the team with? Did he join the gang with crabs already? Because if so, ew.
I don't know. Who knows? Ew. Yeah, gross. Also, if that's his nickname, because he's like, yeah, man. Like, he's a point of pride for him too, which is also disgusting. Yeah,
it's gross.
All right. I think you said like something him. That you hated. I did not, of course, wanted more crazy general, but also we needed some more sleuths. We needed a bit more sleuths.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we have it. It's there. We talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
I have never used the word sleuths outside of talking about this movie twice. And so it's
we
there.
We talked about this movie?
Mark, don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it, Mark. It's fine.
We only talked about it this one time. Don't you worry about it. All right, let's go to our favorite scene. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
My favorite scene was the one with the motorcycles.
Sure. Yeah, that was a good one. That was a really good one.
Mm-hmm.
Erica, what was your favorite scene?
I like the scene when Monk escaped. And he's kind of going through the desert. You're not sure if he's going to make it or not. And then he stumbles across just man in desert with jug of water and card table and some tiny bit of shade set up.
Mm-hmm.
It was so random. And
what was he doing out there?
It's never explained. And then he essentially gets his car taken over. I mean, he's
with
still
him
in
it,
the car.
With him in it.
But, you know, kind of gets his car commandeered, doesn't fight it. Now, he's like, okay, very dehydrated man, just drive me to wherever you need to be, I guess.
Some people take solitaire very seriously.
Yeah, that guy did, I guess. Yeah.
You can only play it when you're by yourself in the middle of the desert. It's the only place you can play it.
Yeah.
You have to be solitary. You need to be on your own. You need to be detached
from society. And solitary. That's the two things you need to play solitaire. Yeah.
It's tough to find a favorite scene in this because this is like a collection of moments than it is scenes. Yeah. Which speaks to the overall like movie. I'll be interested once we talk about the hot box because as I sort of mentioned early on, Joe Viola and Jonathan Demme, Viola was a commercial director. Jonathan Demme was doing publicity. They had not made a movie. They were just in the right place at the right time and given the opportunity to make a biker film. And they didn't know what they were doing, you know, and they were just sort of making it up as they went and also given a lot of freedom by Corman. So, you know, so it's kind of hard to come up with, but maybe I have to think maybe it's every time they went to Cloud's place because it's the first time they do it, it's in the daytime. The second time is at night. And the first time you're like, who's this? Because Cloud is mentioned only during the drug deal where they're like, we'll see you at Cloud's place. We have no context for what that means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden Cloud's there like, hey, what's up, guys? And you're like, who's Cloud? What is this? And then they come back later and you're like, oh, he's one of the other angel guys. Right. The drug deal. I forgot about it because we don't talk about it outside of the opening scene pretty much.
Plus, if I remember correctly, do we ever see the inside of Cloud's place, or is it always just the back door to the house?
It's always just the front door. The front door yeah. where he's like, hey, what's... Oh, yeah, maybe the back door
to his
house.
It was the back door. Yeah.
And the second time, why I liked it, is that the second time, that's when Monk, drives up in the camper. And then it's him walking up to it, and you can hear them have ADR'd it, and he's like... Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've got us. They're up in this ghost town, and we've all been taking Long John and Juicer have been, are taken hostage, and we got to go up there, and we got to take. So they're trying to like quickly. We need to get the plot back in there so people know what the hell we're doing. And it's very funny to me that they had it. There's not much there to those scenes, but I'll bring those up. So let's move on to final questions. Here are final questions for Angels Hard as They Come. In a police car, is the police siren in the light or is it separate of the light?
I don't know. I've never been in one.
It's separate from the light. The siren is not built into the light.
Okay. Because the undercover cop cars seem to have a siren, but no lights that they ever display.
It's because they're undercover.
Right.
The lights would give them away. But the big horn on top of the roof.
But they have no horn on the roof either. It's just coming from, I guess, inside their car, which it must be loud as hell with that siren. Because it's not on top of the car at all. So it's like...
Yeah, but you know how you get nose blind about things? The undercover cops get sound blind. They don't even hear it.
They need that alarm to go to bed at night.
Yeah, it's their ocean machine.
Right. It's their white noise. You call it an ocean machine. I like that. Hey, I'm looking for an ocean machine. I'm having some trouble sleeping.
Oh, no problem. Got one right here. I'm sorry. That was on undercover police siren. My bad. Let me change it to ocean.
Oh, I like that one.
Right. Oh, that works. This is probably more, well, this is for both of you, but I'm imagining Mark he might know the answer to this. Have you ever had a car stall on you after just hitting a big puddle?
I mean, I know that it can happen, but no, it's never happened.
Because that's how they get away from the cops in the beginning of this movie is they hit a puddle and they just stall out. And I was like,
yeah, it can happen, but no, it's never happened to me. I've never.
Okay.
I think older cars, it can, but I don't know the reason. It possibly could just be getting water or dirt and stuff inside of a carburetor. That's what I would think could potentially happen. But
Erica, what's your answer?
Yeah, I mean, if it's a chase situation, it happens 9 out of 10 times. So, yeah, definitely. Yeah,
for sure. There's a scene early on where they're pretty rude to the gas attendant, and they talk about needed like the top quality gas for their engines. Is that a thing with motorcycles?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, probably.
Only in chase situations, Erica?
Yeah, but 9 out of 10 motorcycles need premium gasoline. Otherwise, they ping. I don't want my engine to ping.
That's right.
I do put premium gas in our snowmobiles. So, and they're 2-stroke engines, just like I would assume those motorcycles were. So, yeah, that makes sense. That tracks.
Okay. What's the name of your snowmobile gang? Are we allowed to know? Or
right. We haven't seen the jacket you wear when you ride around with your gang.
Well, you guys never look at my back. So, if you did, you would see it.
Fair.
That's why I can never remember you, Mark.
Until that moment comes.
I never look at your back.
No,
and fair. I can never remember you. So, who killed Astrid? Who do you think did
it? Axe.
Mark?
Axe.
Krabs.
Krabs?
Was Krabs even there?
It's hard to tell. It was really shot. Yeah. It was everything in that scene was shot very close up. So it's very hard to tell anything that's going on. It's a little dark.
And there's like six dirty dudes.
Axe is the only one that has the knife, though.
Yeah, I believe it is Axe. Because at the end, he has the knife.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Which ends up in Gary Busey's hands somehow, but... It's Axe had the knife. I think that's right. I don't know, but I think so. Because Scott Glenn, of course, was right. that at some point one of his gang members was going to rise up against the general, and it happens.
I think it was Axe. You know, he was just hungry, and we do crazy things when we're hungry. You know, had there been just some snacks or some jerky, bowl of chips out there at Ghost Town, you know, Astrid could still be alive.
He's been in ketosis for a year. And he is losing
definitely
his mind.
No chips.
What the hell is ketosis? How many times have we said ketosis in this podcast? What is even? I don't even know what you're talking about. The whole keto diet
is based on keeping yourself at such a low carb rate that you keep your body in ketosis. It's something you can measure by peeing
on yourself.
What is it? You keep yourself in ketosis.
You just pee on yourself, and you're like, I'm in ketosis.
I've been in ketosis a lot.
You lose your mind on a keto diet.
A metabolic state that occurs when your body burns fat for energy instead of glucose.
Yep, that's right. Oh, she fell asleep learning.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. I joined a science and diet podcast all of a sudden. I thought we were supposed to talk about movies.
Well, hopefully you won't fall asleep during the research, which isn't long. But anyway, before we get there, one last question. Who smells worse, the hippies or the bikers?
I think that's a shared smell. The stink is different, but it's no less pungent.
Erica, what do you think?
I think it's got to be the bikers, because we did see one of the hippies bathe.
We did see a
hippie take a quick.
She did pits and naughty bits.
Yeah. So I have to say bikers. I have to say bikers. Or guy out in the desert by himself.
Yes.
With the card table.
Yes. Right. For sure. He's the stinkiest of all of them.
He reeks.
Yeah.
That's how Monk found him. He was like, what is that smell?
He did not bring a small amount of water. He brought like a giant tureen of water. Like, he was like, I'm not going anywhere for a long time.
Yeah. He has like one that the size that they dump over the coach's head when they win a sports game.
The giant Gatorade.
Right.
Yeah.
Plus, that's the specific name for the size.
Plus, you can't underestimate the smell of patchouli oil. I mean, that's going to be tough.
I think the hippies and like some sage or like, you know, they're burning a little bit to somewhat cover the fact that they have not bathed in a long time and they all reek, but they smell, but they're trying to somewhat cover it up. The bikers, not at all.
No, not at all.
I think it's the bikers. Yeah. All right. Very quick research here, because it's hard to find a whole lot about a movie that came out in 1971. But according to Demme, as he said in Crab Monsters, Teenage Caveman and Candy Striped Nurses, he says that the budget was $125,000 and they had 3 weeks to shoot, which seems a little long for a Corman movie, but
yeah.
Okay. He said that Corman's only advice to us was, quote, if you want to stay on this film, stay exactly on schedule and exactly on budget, because if you go at all over budget or over schedule, I'm afraid we'll be looking at a very big problem. That was his advice to these guys, which apparently he trusted, because I can't imagine he went out. I know they shot some in California, but they're also in Yuma, Arizona. I don't know where the ghost town exactly was located, but I can't imagine Roger ever coming out to set. So it does open in 1971. It opens starting in July of 1971 in the South. Kind of gets to Los Angeles or California closer to the end of 1971 and really starts getting reviews out of Los Angeles in top of 1972. So that's kind of how it sort of plays, kind of takes a long time. It opens in 1972. It plays with Angels Die Hard and Naked Angels as part of a triple of biker movies produced by Corman. Naked Angels is before he starts New World, but it's in 1969. He produces it, and it's directed by Bruce Clark, who would go on to direct Galaxy of Terror for New World years later. And that's how he knew them. I don't know how well this did or what the box office return was. It had to have done well, because Corman immediately starts Joe Viola and Jonathan Demme on their next project, as we mentioned, the Hot Box, and they go out to the Philippines, and that's where they shoot that, as he was shooting all his Women in Prison movies at the time out there. So clearly it did okay. let's end with a Roger Corman quote here from the movie world of Roger Corman. This is what he has to say about Angels Hard as They Come. He says, Angels Hard as They Come was the first film made by the team of Jonathan Demme and Joe Viola, who went on to make several films for us. Jonathan is doing a large budget film for United Artists at the moment. This was an interesting film because it was a motorcycle picture with a little more philosophical theme behind it.
Is it?
I don't think he hasn't seen it in 5 years at this point, clearly. It dealt with the nature of guilt, which is something you don't normally deal with in that kind of film. I thought the film did a good job of it. Hasn't seen it in 5 years. Easily hasn't seen it in 5 years. He does not recall it.
Guilt or being guilty of a biker crime.
And trying to pin it on someone else.
Right. Okay. No, yeah. He hasn't seen this in a while.
He hasn't seen it. He hasn't seen it in at least 5 years. And he's like, it was good. It was a good one. But I remember who did it, and they're very famous now. So
right. So let's talk about them.
Yeah. So let's talk about how famous they are. And that's it. That is Angels, Hard as They Come, the now first of the Angels biker movies that we will talk about on this podcast. We got two more to go. And this was an interesting one. So check it out if you would like to. If you want to check out all of our other episodes and articles and our t-shirts and our socials, it's all in one place. Our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. That's where you can check out all of that information. Go there, buy a t-shirt. Help us out. If not that, tell a friend. Spread the word about the podcast. We've got only 20 more years of this. So please tell a friend. And we'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast. Bye, everybody. Vroom!